Oh, come on, man. We need the work. Let's go. Let's go.
Down the middle of the field. He's got Cruz. 35, 30.
Rogan intercepted.
Touchdown, Giants.
And welcome to Monday's edition of Big Blue Kickoff Live here on Giants.com alongside Paul Dottino. I'm Lance Meadow. So glad you could spend part of your day with us here as over the next 60 minutes we'll be breaking down all that is happening with respect to the New York Giants. 201-939-4513 is the telephone number. You can also chime in via hashtag Giants Chat. And remember, fans, don't forget Big Blue Kickoff Live is brought to you by DraftKings, the daily fantasy sports destination. At DraftKings, you can play as often as you want with no season-long commitment. Go to DraftKings.com, enter promo code CONTACT to play for free today. DraftKings Fantasy Sports, free to play. Well, about a week and a half away from the big day. Paul is itching. He can't wait, obviously. That goes without saying.
I got all my video work done.
Well, that's a nice little progression to note.
All done.
Wow, so you got some wiggle room here.
All
over the
done.
Next weekend.
And,
yes.
And,
uh-oh,
and.
The book is coming out here.
The entire folder of notes is complete.
Is complete. All right.
Is
so that
complete.
Means we can put you to the test today. Feel free to give us a call. You want to test him on fifth rounders, sixth rounders. He's got the entire
there
dissertation
is.
Ready to go. There's a lot of news and notes that have been circulating over the course of the weekend. So we're going to get into that and how that may impact the top 10, how that may impact the Giants. And obviously we'll get to your phone calls. We'll get to your tweets. Everything up for debate, up for conversation. Let's hit on the big newsworthy stories, Paul, that have emerged over the course of the last few days. Last week we talked about, obviously, the Rams and the Titans made that blockbuster trade. Two things now. It seems as if Tennessee is trying to find a way to move back into the top 10 since they have a plethora of draft picks.
Yeah.
And the other thing that we're hearing is the Browns at number 2 could do one of two things. They could stay put and not necessarily take a quarterback, or they could move down and try to maximize the value of the pick like the Titans did to perhaps get greater assets. But, you know, we're under the assumption that two quarterbacks would likely go in the top 10. If Cleveland moves out, maybe two quarterbacks don't go in the top 10, and then all of a sudden a defensive player moves up the charts, or maybe even an offensive player.
Well, then there's a third scenario, which we just talked about before we went on the air, Lance, and that is Jerry Jones personally scouted Goff, the quarterback from California, at his workout. And that gives people some thoughts that, well, maybe in fact he is looking for Tony Romo's successor, and Dallas might actually think about taking a quarterback. So maybe even if those other two teams don't wind up doing something to take a QB, the Cowboys might wind up taking a QB. This is getting really, really interesting.
Yes. Indeed. And Dallas did look at Jared Goff's workout. Jerry Jones supposedly was enamored by that performance. He was impressed. So they could very well be the wild card. Or, for all we know, maybe a team does move up to the number 2 spot that we didn't anticipate was
yeah.
in the business, or at least an interest to grab a quarterback, and then all of a sudden they do. But that obviously is going to shake things up. It would be good news, Paul, for the Giants if two quarterbacks go before they get ready to pick in the top 10.
Would be incredibly great news for the Giants. The last thing in the world that they want is for only one QB to go, because that's one less guy who could fall to them at one of the positions that they're interested in. Look, I'm going to tell you flat out, folks, I don't think it's going to happen, but I know of at least two people, including one, Bill Parcells. In fact, let me tell you, there's three people I know, very well-respected football people who have been in this game a long time. Parcells is one of them, who have said to me they think that Cook from Michigan State will be the best professional quarterback in this draft. Now, I don't think any of the top 10 people in this draft think that, but there are some long-term football people who do, which would beg me to ask, is it possible that he might go in the top 10 and maybe three QBs could go? I don't think that's a likely scenario. Well, I don't hear anybody in the league currently saying that they think he will go that high. But I do find it interesting that Parcells and two other unnamed people who I will not tell you about, but they've been doing this for decades, they think that Cook is the best prospect.
Well, it's interesting you brought up Cook, because one of the things that I heard, Paul, is Cleveland may be saying to itself, if they value Cook, if Hugh Jackson feels that he could be the quarterback of the future, why reach for a guy with the number 2 overall pick, considering they have other needs? Maybe grab and address another position And then when you get to the second or the third round, then you target a guy like Cook. I could see Cleveland going in that direction based on what you said. If there are some people that quietly believe he has the most upside, why go after a quarterback in the top two if you think you get good value a little bit later on?
Especially if there is a consensus among current GMs, or at least among the experts who talk to these folks, that he's not going to be taken that high. I think a lot of folks, when they do their mock drafts, they're thinking that he may be as high as the late first round, but that's about as high as I've seen him going in the mocks. But again, it's funny because sometimes the mocks are all about the rumor mill and the smoke that people are breathing all around the league, and those people are talking to coaches, they're talking to assistants, they're talking to GMs, who quite frankly have a lot to gain by not telling you the truth.
Of course.
Okay? It's when you talk to other people, like personnel guys who may be, you know, a little bit more under the radar, and sometimes you're talking to folks at the colleges who will tell you, yeah, you know, we've gotten a bunch of calls from this team, or they've really done a lot of investigation on this guy. Sometimes that gives you a truer indication of how teams really think about a prospect as opposed to the rumor mill that's above board, so to speak.
Well, everybody seems to have an agenda at this point. The players' camp wants the stock to rise before the draft. The teams want to send signals that we're going in one direction when we're really going
in the
opposite.
It's like playing cards. If I want to show you all of my cards in my hand before we start playing, what have I done?
Well, that's why you have to have a good poker face during this time period, or at least with your words, a poker face, if you want to interpret it from that perspective. But, I mean, just the overall picture, Paul, as you know from following the NFL, there's been plenty of teams that have found quality quarterbacks in the mid to late rounds. It's not
Tom
unusual.
Brady, right?
Russell Wilson too went.
Sure.
So, you know, there's no school of thought or rule of thumb here where you have to take a quarterback in the first round in order to find the franchise guy.
Here's the one rule that does have to be followed, and that is if you're picking as high as the Giants are in the top 10, that guy better be producing at a high level and pretty darn quick. You know, you're not going to draft a guy with the 10th overall pick who's going to, A, not be a big-time producer, or, B, not give you much for 3 years. You can't wait for a guy like that. You're picking in the top 10. He's got to give you something in 2016. He's got to be at least a rotational player, at the very least. You'd like to get more than that, but he better be at least a rotational player this year.
Somebody that contributes right from the start. However, I would say the quarterback, though, is the exception to that rule, Paul, because there are teams, they bring in a quarterback, and sometimes they don't necessarily start day one.
That can happen.
They have their fair share of struggles. But you're right. If you're going after a defensive lineman, an offensive lineman, wide receiver, running back, just about every other position, you expect 10th overall, they're going to come in, they're going to immediately contribute.
Got to get production. I mean, it was just a week or so ago that John Schmelk and I were going through the list of the last 25 years, I guess, of some of the guys who were picked 10th overall in the draft. And Jerome Bettis is a name that immediately came to mind. Rod Woodson was another name that came to mind.
Marcus Allen is another one who went 10th.
I mean, you know, you gotta come up with some pretty good stuff at number 10. I will say this. One other thing that kind of caught me a little bit by surprise the other day, Miles Jack, the UCLA linebacker, went for his revisiting to Indianapolis to go through his second round of physicals. And it was a little bit surprising to me that there was some trepidation that came out of Indy after that particular situation. We heard that people are saying his meniscus, which while apparently it was sewn up in a way that does not allow cartilage to, you know, mesh against cartilage, there's some question about his knee now. Not about him being able to play in 2016, because Jeremy Smith, of course, we already know, was going to sit out this year.
Jalen Smith is
sitting out this year.
And by the way, not to interrupt, but the recheck showed that there's still some nerve damage for Jalen Smith. But whereas Jack, as you were saying, there's still questions, but not necessarily as serious.
Yeah, apparently with Smith, the question is, when does he get back on the field? It will not be in 2016. The question with Jack is, how long will he be able to play? There's a question about his durability over the course of time. People think, apparently, that he's going to be able to play right away. They just don't know how that meniscus repair is going to hold up over time. And so if you're a team and you love Miles Jack, and I think everybody realizes he is a top five talent at the very least, okay, you're going to your medical staff and you're saying, hey, doc, what do you say? 3 years? 4 years? 5 years? 6 years? Is it possible he could play for 10 given what's happened to his knee so far? What are we talking about here? Because if I'm drafting him in the top 10, I need to know realistically how many years can I expect to have this player on my roster? And that question, that issue, has now become a big part of what's going to happen in the top 10.
Whether the knee deteriorates or so forth, I mean, these are things that you certainly have to ask yourself. And the same thing with Jalen Smith. I mean, somebody's probably going to take Jalen Smith. The question is, where does the risk equal the reward? Meaning, what round do you take a flyer on somebody like that when you know he's probably going to be a redshirt rookie?
The people I talk to say he probably will not go higher than the fourth round.
And that's fair.
Given the negativity that came out of the last check.
So that will wrap up here the latest in terms of the draft news. We certainly thank you for those of you watching on Twitter. And if you want to continue watching the program, head over to Giants.com. So we're going to take your phone calls here at 201-939-4513, hashtag Giants Chat. He's Paul Dottino. I'm Lance Meadow. So glad you could spend part of your Monday with us here on Giants.com. All draft news, all Giants-related news up for discussion. Let's open up the phone lines. Q is in East Orange. He gets us going. Q, what's happening?
What's going on? How are y'all doing today?
Doing well, Q. How's things with you?
I want to talk about the draft. But first, before I get into the draft, I want to talk about I've been blogging a lot of Giants articles on the website, whatever. I'm starting to see a lot of fans and hear a lot of fans. They're begging for Anquan Boldin, and he's 36 years old. He never was a burner. Yeah, he has good ball skills, but I think we'll be better off. I think he's still sitting there for a reason. I'm not saying he's a bad player, but I think he's at the tail end of his career. And I think if we are looking for a receiver, I think we should get younger. I mean, we have they're going to be receivers in the second and third and fourth later rounds that we can probably snatch up. Like, one of my favorites is Carew. I mean, yeah. He pretty much reminds me of Bolden, just a younger version. I guess he's a little bit faster, but, you know, I don't know what he's going to do in the pro level, but I would love to have him in a later round.
I wouldn't say that Carew compares to Bolden, but I would say he's certainly a make-it prospect who – Any of the receivers in my mind that are going to go in the top four rounds, at least based on my tape work, have make it greats. There are a plethora of receivers who I think could make it in the league this year and actually give you something. So that part of your argument, to me, makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, and another thing I wanted to talk about as far as the draft, I wanted to go into the draft, about the draft pick, about that 10th spot. It's I'm pulling my hair out because there's so many ways this thing can go, and the closer it gets, the more gray hair I get. But
so you're pulling your hair out, and it's becoming gray. Okay,
yeah, I was just gonna say there's not much hope for him. I mean,
yeah. Well, what other options do you have at this point?
The hair that I have left, I'm pulling. You know, simply because. I'm going to give you my opinion. Last year, I think Flowers was a hell of a job as a rookie at left tackle, but I think naturally he would be better suited at right tackle. And I think that Reach kind of reached last year. Reached a little bit at nine, because I think we could have gotten him probably at, like, you know, I'd say 15, 16 probably. I mean, not saying anything bad about the pick, because he turned out to be a good left tackle. He had a couple mistakes, you know, but he was a rookie with them, so I give him a pass. But this year they're talking about taking another tackle, you know. And I see plenty of other tackles in the later rounds. I don't know what you guys are seeing, but as far as my eye test, well, I see at least three or four right tackles, not left tackles, definitely surefire right tackles.
Q, I'm with you.
That could come in and do a great job.
Okay, first of all, you're right that there are a number of potential right tackles in the second and third rounds that may be make-it players, but they're not plug-and-play guys, okay? There are only three plug-and-play guys in this draft at offensive line, specifically at tackle. We know who they are, Tunsil, Stanley, Conklin, okay. And that's it. That's where the line of delineation has to be drawn, because the other guys all have work to do. Whether you're talking about Freddie, you're talking about Spriggs, you're talking about Decker, these guys are not on that level. They're not plug-and-play guys. Not that they're going to be bad players, but they're not plug-and-play. Those top three guys are clearly special.
Well, as far as Staley, guys, from what I've seen from him, his upper body seems kind of weak. I think he needs to get stronger. And I don't know if he would be a good right tackle. I see him being a very good left tackle.
Yeah.
Now, if you're going to draft him, I would oppose that Jerry Reese switch his flowers and put him back at right tackle where he really belongs. And you let the finesse left tackle do his job, even though he'll be a rookie again. You know, we have a rookie situation at left tackle again. But one more note before, you know, you guys take – I'm going to hang up and let you guys take other calls. This Floyd guy, he's a tweener. I don't care what – anybody says he doesn't do anything very good. He's an okay linebacker. He's an okay pass rusher. But at 10, he's not a blue chipper. Please, Jerry Reese, if you're listening, don't take this guy.
Leonard Floyd? Is that who you're referring to?
Leonard Floyd.
From Georgia?
Now, I'm not saying don't take him. You can take him.
But he just said don't take him.
He's not a blue chipper.
Gray hairs, pulling out hairs, take them, don't take them. You're all over the place today, Q. We appreciate the phone call. We'll certainly expand on some of the things you threw out because I do think
you
brought up a number of good points. Floyd and, you know, John and I have brought this up, and I believe you and I have talked about this, Paul. He does fit, though, what the Giants have targeted in the past, which is upside athleticism, raw talent. Similar to JPP. Once again, I'm not saying he's the next JPP, but he fits the bill of when the Giants sort of eye that very athletic guy. If we can move him around, he could do dangerous things. So, you know, I wouldn't rule him out. I mean, I don't know what their draft board looks like. It's all speculation based on what the callers are saying, but I think that could be an intriguing player regardless of whether or not you view him as a tweener.
I have heard more than one football guy tell me he's the most athletic player in this draft. And that goes to your point. The Giants have certainly valued athleticism very high on their board when looking at prospects. You were also going to say about the lineman, I believe.
Well, the offensive lineman, what I was going to bring up is Stanley, who's played predominantly a left tackle during his tenure at Notre Dame. Let's not forget he was also a right tackle in the early stages of his career when Zach Martin was still at Notre Dame. So he does have experience. Once again, his majority of his play is at left tackle, but he does have some experience at right tackle. And remember, most players that play left tackle, Paul, in college, if they can't go to a team that automatically has an opening on the left side, they tend to start on the right side to begin with.
Always. You know, here's the thing. I believe Stanley is good enough that he can play either side. I believe Conklin's good enough that he can play either side. Tunsil, I would just throw him at the left side and just let him be the brick wall that he is. I wouldn't fuss with moving him to either side. But could he play? Yes, he could. He could play the right side. My point to you is this. I do believe, and I flopped on this in the last week. Originally, I had Stanley rated a little higher than Conklin on my board. I went back after listening to some people. I went back and reviewed film again. I did more due diligence. And I've decided that I would actually rate Conklin a fraction ahead of Stanley. I do believe Stanley's a better technician, but I believe that Conklin is more of a brawler.
Okay.
And when I went back and I looked at more tape, what I saw were many instances where Conklin won battles not because he necessarily did everything right, but because he was fighting. And he fought guys, and he scrapped. And he got in there and he did his business and was like, I'm not going to let this guy get through. And maybe it didn't always look pretty, but boy, was he tough and physical. So he has more room for error. See, when a technician makes a mistake, he's usually in trouble because he can't recover. If he's made a mistake with his technique, he's got a problem. He's beat. With a brawler, he can overcome mistakes in technique because he's fighting. So I've decided, and yes, usually the brawler and the power guy is usually the right tackle anyway. I've decided that I would grade Conklin a fraction ahead of Stanley right now if I had my choice between the two.
Now, the other aspect of what Q brought up, most recent caller, about perhaps moving Flowers to right if you bring in maybe more of a technician. Just let's be clear here. Jerry Reese, they've been on the record during the course of the offseason, Paul, that they see him as a left tackle. Now, Mike Solari is a new offensive line coach. He's obviously going to get his hands on all of these guys once start working out. He'll be able to at least give his two cents. But all indications as it stands right now, they are confident that left side with Pugh and Flowers and Richburg have built enough continuity over the last season that I don't think they're right now inclined to move and mix and match that group.
They've built a picket fence on the left side of this offensive line that they really don't want to fuss with if they don't have to. And if you're drafting one of the three premier offensive linemen in this draft in the top 10 picks, you're not going to feel compelled to make that move out of necessity. So why should you?
Absolutely.
Really?
Yeah.
That's what
it's
it comes down
to. 201-939-4513 is the telephone number. Hashtag Giants Chat. We'll get to your tweets as well. Steve is in West Point. Steve, what's happening?
Hey, guys. How you doing, Lance? How you doing, Paul?
Doing well, Steve. How's things with you?
Fantastic. Beautiful day out, finally.
Absolutely.
So I was calling to talk to you guys. I want to list off the last 10 years of the 10th pick overall in the draft. I'm going to throw the names out, and I want to make a statement about it and ask you your guys' opinion. So real quick, I'll go through it. St. Louis Rams, last year picked Todd Gurley. 2014, the Lions picked Eric Ebron. Then, the year before that, Chance Warmack goes to the Titans. Then, the year before that, Stephen Gilmore goes to the Bills. The year before that, Blaine Gabbert goes to the Jacksonville Jaguars. Year before that, Tyson Alualu goes to the Jaguars. Then Michael Crabtree, the year before that, goes to San Francisco. Jared Mayo goes to the Patriots. Yeah, Mayo goes to the Patriots. And then Ombi Okioli goes to the Texans. And Matt Leinhart goes to the Cardinals the year before that.
Yep.
And I'm looking at it, and, you know, maybe a handful of those guys are anything significant. And I was just thinking, like, do you guys think with this pick, with this draft, where we're picking, that it's so loaded that we're guaranteed, not guaranteed, but a really good chance to get a guy that's going to be an impact player?
I think so.
Over the last couple of years really hasn't.
Well,
that doesn't feel like
if you went back a couple more picks, you could have found Terrell Suggs.
Yeah, I mean, if you track the history a little further back, I mean, I think you found impactful 10th overall picks, plus you found Hall of Famers, too.
Yes, you have.
In that spot. And remember, you know, part of the evaluation process, Steve, is also giving that 3 or 4 year window. So it's still too early to tell Chance Warmack, Stephon Gilmore, even a guy like Blaine Gabbert. Anybody else beyond that, I think the jury's out for the most part. But some of the most recent ones, we still need to see these guys develop.
And let me add one other thing to this equation. Usually when you're picking 10th, and I'm not belittling the Giants in any way, they've had a bad season, they're picking where they're picking. But if you go back over the course of time, usually those teams that are picking in that spot are picking there because they're not very good. So chances are their margin of error is probably a little more than it was for some of the better teams. I mean, when you're a good team and you're suddenly picking in this spot, it's a weird thing. It makes you feel kind of like, oh, man, what are we doing here? It's unfamiliar territory. Well, there are some teams here who made some of these picks who, you know, look, Detroit, Houston, Jacksonville, San Francisco's been pretty poor for a while.
Tennessee.
Cincinnati, until recently, you know, they weren't so great. And so, you know, these teams are not that good for a reason. Maybe it's not the fact that they picked 10th and didn't get such a great player. Maybe it's the fact that they didn't pick so well.
Well, and Steve, the other thing to add to your question, because, I mean, the heart of your question, I believe, was, you know, you're concerned that maybe there's not enough depth, that when the Giants pick 10th overall, they're not going to get a playmaker, and maybe it turns out to one of these recent guys. I think that while there may not be an overwhelming amount of depth at every position in this draft, there is enough depth that goes about 15, 20 deep that will enable the Giants, no matter what direction they go, they should get a playmaker that comes in year one and is able to immediately contribute.
And understand, the draft is deep at positions the Giants happen to need.
Yeah.
This is a good fit this year.
Absolutely, especially on the defensive line.
It really is. So I wouldn't worry about that. And by the way, Matt Leinart, man, going into that draft, I didn't think he was a first-round pick. I never understood that pick.
Quarterbacks are always a very troublesome position.
Go ahead.
Well, I was going to say, like, so you got the Dallas Cowboys pick ahead of us. And, you know, their record says that they didn't play good last year, but we all know really because of Tony Romo, you know. So they're a really good team that's going to get a really good pick. And we all know there's probably five elite players in the in this draft, and that are once they're gone, then it's like a whole bunch of like second tier guys. And I was just wondering, because I feel like a lot of guys fit our scheme pretty well. I feel like no matter who's on the board when we pick, we're going to get a good pick. I just, is it my bias that makes me think that? That's what I'm thinking, because I go back 10 years and I'm like, really, it hasn't produced much, this pick. And there's only really five elite players on the board. Am I just trying to convince myself that these guys are going to be good for our scheme? So I just wanted to get your guys' opinion. That's all.
Well, I mean, I think the other aspect of it is, and Steve, appreciate the phone call, and, you know, sometimes going back in history and looking at trends brings up a good point, and I think it's fair to raise that. You know, you don't know what the mindset of a lot of these teams were, Paul. You know, not every team goes for the best player available.
No.
Some teams go for, hey, we need an offensive lineman. It may not be a good value pick. We're just going to take the offensive lineman. So, you know, that's sometimes when you reach for a player, more often than not, it's going to come back to haunt you. The Giants, they usually go for the best player available, even though they may have depth at that position. It may not be a major need. And I think that gives you a little bit more flexibility to hopefully maximize the value of the pick.
Yeah.
That's something to also take into consideration. And, you know, just to be speculative at this point, Paul, you figure the Giants, you know, and listen, a lot of things could change based on the trades and who maybe may surprise you, but you figure they'll be in a position to perhaps grab two of the top three offensive linemen.
Probably.
In terms of tackle. You know, Conklin and Stanley could still be on the board.
There'll be at least one of them there,
one.
I believe.
Okay, so I
at
think,
least one of them.
I think that's a fair assumption.
Yeah.
It's a possibility, and once again, these players that I'm throwing out, I'm not saying that this is what the Giants should do. It's possible Ezekiel Elliott is still there. It's possible.
Possible.
Which is considered the top running back
right
now.
I would find it amazing if he gets by Philadelphia, but it's possible.
I would too, but I think it's possible. I don't think it's
possible
out or a stretch to say Elliott couldn't be around the 10. I also think it's possible that perhaps the top corner, Vernon Hargraves, could be around there.
Unless you consider
10.
Ramsey a corner.
Well,
I think Ramsey's going to be a corner, to be honest
with
you.
But even if Ramsey
is
a corner, he's gone.
He's gone.
So
Hargraves could be.
So let's put it this way. One of the top two, potentially.
Yeah.
Let me phrase it that way, in case you're right. You look at Ramsey as a corner.
Eli Apple is going to be there, probably.
Eli
and
Apple.
I got no problems with him, by the way. I think he's a top 15 player.
That's interesting. I mean, some people would put Alexander maybe a little bit higher than Apple. But, if you think he's a top three corner, perhaps he'll be available. And then the other position is the defensive line. I think that you have a potential to have perhaps the top defensive tackle, or at least the number two defensive tackle, and a few of the top five defensive ends. So when you take all that into consideration, Paul, there should be a playmaker there.
No question.
And Steve, thanks again for the phone call. Thanks so much for weighing in. 201-939-4513 is the telephone number. Hashtag Giants chat. We got Pablo in Los Angeles waking up early to join us. Pablo, what's happening?
Hi, how are you doing? This is Jason calling from Denmark.
Oh, okay.
Want to talk about cornerback?
So, how's everything?
Oh, I'm fine. Oh, wow. I got right on.
Yes
you
did. Absolutely.
I thought I was being screened. My bad.
No, you are on the air loud and clear.
Hey, I wanted to talk about cornerback.
Sure. Yeah.
And I had a player in mind, and not the greatest player on earth, but I was thinking Antonio Cromartie. But then while I was waiting, I was just surfing the web. Then I hear his heart is in Dallas now. So now I'm not thinking Antonio Cromartie. But anyone that has their heart in Dallas, I'm not thinking of. But what do you think we're going to do with cornerback? Are we going to just draft, or do you think we're going to go for a veteran to help us out there?
Well, you have two veterans on the team right now in DRC and Janoris Jenkins for your two outside guys. If you're talking about the slot position, I think there's an opportunity, Paul, for them to target that position in the draft and have a young guy come in and be an immediate starter. Looks like we have a special guest on the line, too. You got
yeah, we have the whole family.
The whole
I locked myself in the bathroom so that I can, you know, talk on Big Blue Kickoff Live.
Oh, boy. I love the passion there.
Great effort. I'll tell you that. Put that on his scouting report.
No,
great effort.
In the crack of the door live on the show right now.
Here's what I would tell you. I'm with Lance on this. I don't think the veteran free agent market is real, real strong right now for picking up a corner. And somebody like Cromartie, who has been a starter in this league, probably wants a guarantee that he's going to be a starter again and wants comparable money to do so. The Giants are not going to start Cromartie if he comes here. That's just not going to happen. I mean, they've invested the money in Jenkins. True. They invested money in DRC a couple years back, last year. It's not going to happen. So I don't see him being a fit. And the rest of the guys, you know, you may be able to sign someone of a Walter Thurman-type ilk if he wants to still play. You know, somebody like Gerard Powers of the Cardinals. Somebody of that nature may still be available that might be a decent fit. But I think that there are a number of corners that could be all the way down in round three that have the potential to be a slot corner in this league with a make-it grade. Another position, which we don't talk about a lot, that's got depth in terms of make it grades. Remember, the Giants want a third corner. They're not looking for a starter on the outside.
No, they're looking for a guy that's versatile enough.
Which is great.
Yeah.
Because that's what this draft has. This draft has a bunch of those guys.
Agree.
So that's good.
Cool. Well, I got to go put my son to bed now. But I'll be listening on with headphones.
Well, sounds good. We appreciate the phone call. He's running his own scouting combine, it seems like, in the house.
Wow.
The draft news. But that's some passion and some dedication, locking yourself in the bathroom to make sure that you get clear and concise sound here on Big Blue Kickoff Live. We do appreciate it, and we know we have a lot of fans overseas that follow the show through there. I would agree with you, Paul. I do see a lot of depth at corner. And here's one other player that I don't want to rule out. This doesn't mean that the Giants are not going to bring in more competition, but I've said this time and time again, Paul, Bennett Jackson was utilized in the slot in training camp last year.
Yeah.
I still think he's an option that he could potentially get reps, assuming he holds up and stays healthy.
Well, I mean, I'll give you an example, all right? Let me just pull out my notes here. I went through and did film work on 20 corners, okay? And that's how deep I went, and that's a lot. And
now, for the equivalency, how many pages did that take up? Just so the listeners...
That's two pages, total of 20 corners.
Well,
I
let's
did.
Hold it up so we can see. Look at this. The beautiful...
There you go.
The allotment, the
go.
Charting,
okay.
I mean, the pencil notes on the side. I mean, this is really professional.
And of the top 10, I have 1, 2, 3, 4 guys
that can play in the slot.
Who could all play slot, okay? And that goes all the way down to guys who are third-round projections. You see? So.
And then you even have more on page two.
I even have some more.
You got two more slots.
I got a couple more. That's
three, actually.
Three more in the top 15.
Yeah.
And that goes all the way into the fourth round.
And there's nothing wrong with drafting a guy in the fourth round.
So, I mean, they're there. They're there. I mean, if you want to ask about them, we'll talk about them another time. I don't want to waste anyone's time with them now, but they're there. The one thing that I think is very, very interesting about what the Giants have done, they've invested a lot of money in the line. Bringing back JPP, bringing in Olivier Vernon, and adding a bunch of veteran linebackers. You and I have discussed this for the last couple of years, the philosophy of do you enhance the pass rush, do you help the front seven, or do you look to enhance the back seven and enhance the secondary because the pass rush maybe isn't what you want it to be. Well, the Giants went that route, and it didn't work so well last year. So now they've gone back to trying to enhance the front seven, thinking that will then help the back seven, which is the way they won two Super Bowls. So, you know, I was all right with trying the other way, but I think they're going back to plan A.
Well, and I think it's the way that a number of other recent Super Bowl teams have won titles as well, Paul. Look at what Denver did this year. Not saying that they didn't have secondary
players.
Well,
Seattle went the other way.
Well, Seattle did, but Seattle had a good pass rush too, Paul.
But they were primarily...
Had a nice rotational. They did. They had playmakers, the Legion
of Boom. They were primarily a secondary-oriented team, at least a couple of years ago when they won it.
And I agree. They had guys that, listen, if I said go out, man-to-man cover people, I'd feel confident. But I do think it's easy to overlook all of the other players that they did have on the line, too, that I think helped contribute. Bennett's of the world, the Cliff Averills of the world, some of the linebackers who were very good at getting to the quarterback, the Bruce Irvins and so forth. They did have a nice rotation.
What we've seen is no matter what you do to enhance your secondary, if you don't have at least a decent amount of guys making some plays up front, you're in trouble.
Absolutely.
Because that's the bottom line.
You can only cover for so long.
That's it.
Regardless
that's
of whether
it.
You're Richard Sherman or you're Byron Maxwell or you know, your Cam Chancellor and so forth. You
yeah.
eventually break apart from your offensive assignment and so forth.
Oh, we got another caller up?
We do have. We got some tweets.
Okay, because I did want to comment on the schedule.
Absolutely.
Have you done that yet?
No, since I've been here. I mean, I did it on a video and everything, but now I haven't done it on Big
Yeah, because I...
Give me a reason.
I want to talk about this schedule.
Well, let's get into that. We'll get to more of your phone calls. No, we'll get to more of your
call,
tweets. You want to go to the
call?
Right. Well, I know it's bubbling in your head here. I don't want, you know, 75 things going on. All right, we'll get to some calls, and then we will weigh in on the schedule. And if you want to weigh in on the schedule as well, feel free to chime in on that perspective. Greg is in Virginia. Greg, what's happening?
Hey, guys. How you doing?
Doing well, Greg. How's things with you?
Good. Hey, I had a question for Paul. Hey, Paul.
Hi.
In regards to Leonard Floyd.
Yes.
And, you know, Stanley and Conklin, you know, some of the more and Hargraves, excuse me. Some of the players we actually think are going to be there at 10 potentially.
Yeah.
The more likelihood. Do you think I'm in the mindset that there's going to be two quarterbacks taken before we pick.
I think so too, to be honest. If I had a gamble on it, I would say two.
Yeah. And so and correct me if I'm wrong, but there's five players that we could put in the elite talent category. And they're at positions that we could actually use. And for me, it's Bosa, Buckner, Jack, Tunsil, and Ramsey, right?
I would not have any argument with that at all.
So that would put them – that means we're within three slots
yep.
of an elite prospect.
Yep.
And to me, I don't want your opinion. Wouldn't it make sense to grab one of them as opposed to sitting at 10 – and rolling the dice on someone like Floyd, who played at 220 pounds, is a tweener, or a tackle that has, you know, there's question as to how committed he is and has upper body strength, or a corner that's 5'10", you know, who is eventually going to be playing against Dez Bryant. Wouldn't it make sense to just, I mean, because the goal is to not be picking that close to top talent.
Well, DRC is going to be taking Dez Bryant in the opener. I don't think you have to worry about a rookie being on Dez Bryant.
He's talking about down the road, maybe 4 or 5 years. Yeah.
Look, I believe that the guys that you were talking about naming-wise who we think are going to be there at 10, I'd be good with any of those guys because I think the value at 10 is appropriate. So I'm not looking to move up. Okay. I understand you are. I'm not. And one of the reasons I would certainly not move up is because I think the Giants also need quantity. And if you're going to move up a few spots, I've had this argument with Anita Marks several times. If you're going to do that, you're going to wind up like giving up a number three or maybe a number three from next year. It's not worth it. This team needs to get younger, and they need as many quality players as they can get their hands on. You know, and if it means, you know, staying put, I'm good with that because I think the draft is deep enough. And quite honestly, here's the thing. This Miles Jack equation now has really thrown me for a loop because if there are enough teams in that top 10 that are worried about that knee, you know, I don't know what the Giants doctors are thinking about him. I don't. But I'm telling you, if it's me.
Smoke screen since we're so close and now there's this big.
I don't think so. I don't think it's a smoke screen. I think there's really a split opinion about the durability of his knee. I think that's pretty clear. I don't think that people are messing with the medical records on this. I'll say this. If it's me, and this is me, okay? The Tino, this is not the Giants. If it's me and my medical guy says to me, I think you're going to get at least 4 or 5 years out of him, I'm taking him. I'll take those 4 or 5 years.
Well, and the other thing that I wanted to throw out about your initial point, Greg, that, you know, you think there's only five elite guys here and you think the Giants are outside of that window. I mean, think about when they drafted Odell Beckham. I mean, who was really considering Odell Beckham among the elite guys? And he outplayed and outclassed everybody else pretty much in front of him.
He was considered, I think, on the fringe.
He was on the fringe, but he wasn't necessarily being considered a top five elite talent. And then, you know, once again, I still think the window for this draft is out. The jury's out. But, you know, it wasn't too long ago that Eric Fisher and Luke Jokel were the number one and number two overall picks,
sure.
And they really have yet to come to fruition. So I wouldn't read too much into, Greg, you know, who everybody considers the five elite guys. There's always going to be players that fall under the radar and make names for themselves who go beyond the top five. That's why I don't necessarily say there's only five elite guys. There's always gems and diamonds in the rough that go further down the road.
And I would add one other thing about Floyd. He's coming in at 6'6", 244. All right, and a 4.59 40 time. Now, I know he just had a pro day. He didn't do the lifting, okay, because he was sick. He had, like, food poisoning or something, so he didn't do the lifting. He wasn't feeling well. So there are some questions about his power because he certainly did not play a power game when he was at Georgia. He was an athletic guy who played in space all the time.
Well, he played at 220 at Georgia.
I understand that. Absolutely. So he needs.
My concern was if he would be able to maintain that through a season.
He needs to get stronger. I don't think there's any question about that. He's got to prove that he can play with power and strength. And I think part of what you what your concern is, hey, he's not going to play in the middle. I'll tell you that right now. There's no way that I would see him playing in the middle. He's got to be, a guy on the outside because he's going to need space to operate. If he gets clogged up fighting 320-pound guards in the second level, that's going to be a problem. So I'm with you on that. So if the Giants were to take a guy like that, who, again, some people think is the most athletic player in this draft, now it's up to Spagnuolo, the defensive coordinator, to figure out how to best use him and keep him out of trouble so that he doesn't get clogged up if he's not strong enough to fight guys off.
Yeah, my last point, and then I'll get off. I know you got other callers. I'm good. There's a lot of players that I think we all agree could contribute to our team and help and become good players. You know, Lawson and Dodd, a big list. My big thing is I just want the value. I don't want Shaq Lawson at 10. You know, I like Shaq Lawson.
Don't disparage Shaq Lawson now.
Oh, I'm just using him as an example. You know, and to me, he's a mid first round pick, not a top 10. So, like, if we end up drafting him, that's great. I just don't want it to be at 10.
Well, here's what I would say to you, and this may allay your trepidation a little bit. I think when you're talking about a guy who there's some debate about as to whether or not he should be five picks here or there, I don't think that's enough of a difference to make an issue out of it. I think you make an issue out of it when a team picks a guy in the first round who a lot of folks or almost everybody says, you know what, he was a second-round pick. If you pick a guy a whole round higher than what the consensus is, I think there's a legitimate question. Okay, a legitimate question. You may not be right, you may be wrong, but it's a question that can be asked. But when you're drafting a guy who somebody says, oh, he should have been 15, but you took him at 10 or 12, come on. The blades are grass in terms of differential there. That's not enough to really question somebody, I don't think.
I think when you got three losing seasons in a row, you got to start counting those blades of grass.
That's more reason you don't count blades of grass. You got to draft guys who are really good, and if you're splitting hairs, that's what happens when you're fine-tuning a team. You can split hairs when you're fine-tuning. The Giants need more than fine-tuning, and they know that.
And Shaq Lawson and Leonard Floyd, and I appreciate the phone call, Greg. Thanks so much for weighing in. Most mock drafts have them in that ballpark of number 10. I don't think the disparity is huge in terms of few people got them in the second round, and then a few people have them high in the first round, low in the first round. I see them in that 10 to 15 barometer on most mock drafts.
Absolutely.
So I don't think it's a stretch. I want to get to a few tweets, and then we will weigh in on the schedule and get to a few more calls at 201-939-4513. People weighing in on a variety of topics. First of all, a question about free agency here. Vic at NFL NYG 43. Can you tell me what happened to McBride and Cofield? I did not see anything that shows them cut. They were both free agents.
Yeah.
Tremaine McBride and Barry Cofield. So you didn't have to cut them. Their contracts expired. That's exactly where they stand.
And have not signed with anybody.
Correct. They are still out there on the market. Dre Day at D_nice_for_life. Flowers should move to right tackle. Stanley or Conklin play left tackle. Flowers was never intended to play left tackle. Well, I don't know about that. I mean, Flowers, many people expected him to be a right tackle with Will Beatty not getting hurt. Will Beatty gets hurt. Obviously, that accelerates his move to left tackle. But I think, you know, and once again, this is still considered maybe speculation, Paul, but I think he was at least drafted with the mindset that later on in his career, he ultimately would take over at left tackle.
The Giants believed that from the very beginning, that he would start out at right tackle and maybe in a year or two would move over to the left. I had always thought when I looked at him that he was going to be a really, you know, better suited to right. But I've been proven wrong that he certainly definitely can play left. The Giants were right. I mean, he can get that done at a very adequate level.
So that's why when you throw out a statement that he wasn't ever intended to go there, I don't know necessarily if that's on target. Ben at Gruen. Ben, Odell and Donald, this was the point that I was bringing up, Paul, were picked 12th and 13th that year in the draft. That shoots down that only elite talent exists in the top five theory. I think that's fair, and I think you go back to previous drafts to show that there are steals to be had even outside maybe who people think are the elite talent and so forth. A.J. Marshall at A.J. Marshall 13. Giants need to draft an offensive tackle, number 10. Ronnie Stanley, plug him in at right tackle to complete the offensive line. I think if you get Stanley, if you got Conklin, I don't think you can necessarily go wrong. I know you have Conklin slightly edged over Stanley at this
point. You know what? It's like pears and apples. You know, there may be a little bit of differences in them, but they're both still fruit, and they're both still good for you.
Can't argue with that. Absolutely. I'm continuing to look through Twitter here as a number of people are weighing in on a variety of topics. Here's another question from AJ. This is interesting. Do you think the Giants are going to draft more offensive players or defensive players when it's all said and done?
Defense.
I would agree with you. I think they're going to target offensive
players. Strength of the draft is defense.
But, yes, there's a lot of depth. So in the later rounds, we went over corner, we said. We know defensive line. There's depth to be had. So those two positions alone, I think you could beef up your roster. But I would not overlook wide receiver as a position they could potentially target in the draft. Offensive line, as we discussed.
No doubt.
I mean, those are the two offensive positions, I think, of them all, that probably you would look to add a few more names into the mix. 201-939-4513 is the telephone number. As we get into more of your tweets and more of your phone calls, I do want to make some time for the schedule.
Yep.
Before we continue.
Oh, and I got
dialogue.
A promo I got to do. I got to do a promo. I forgot.
Promo.
I got to do a promo.
Okay. Well, what's this promo?
I forgot the promo. Okay. Well, I got to do this because our community relations department here at the Giants works very, very hard, and they do a great job of having events throughout the year. Tonight, the Giants community relations department is holding a Giants Women's Club draft preview chalk talk with Jesse Armstead, myself, and Anita Marks. It'll be right here at the Giants facility. If you go to the Giants website or go to the Giants Twitter, I believe there's information on how to buy tickets through Ticketmaster. You could also go right to Ticketmaster.com and I believe find the event there as well. I'm told there are very few tickets left. They've almost sold it out, which is pretty cool.
Nice.
It starts tonight at 6:30. There'll be some food here, and then at 7:30 we actually get down to the X's and the O's. So that's tonight, Giants Draft Chalk Talk, Jesse Armstead, myself, Anita Marks, here at the Giants facility. If you're interested, again, check on the Giants website, or maybe you could always call here to the receptionist, and they'll have more information for you, or go to Ticketmaster.com. I'm sorry, I did want to get that out there.
No, not at all.
Because I know they still got a few tickets left, and maybe some people still want to get in.
And you will be hanging around after the event for autographs and one-on-one X's and O's powwows, right?
But they're not getting into the folder.
Well, they may not get into the folder.
They're not getting into the folder.
That doesn't mean that you're against having at least a thorough conversation with anybody that wants to break down the X's and O's a little bit more in detail.
That can be done.
Because remember, there's only so much that you can cover with the allotted time, Paul. So, you know, there may be somebody that really wants all dissertation.
No, they're going to want to talk to Jesse, I'm sure, because he's a great guy.
Absolutely. Well, you know, two legends on one table. That may be hard to overcome. Let's get into the schedule here before we get back to more of your phone calls. Observations in terms of the schedule. I think one thing jumped out to me right away,
please,
Paul, which I like about this year's schedule compared to what the Giants had to deal with the previous year. I like the fact that division games are spread out across the year. If you remember,
great,
they were all bunched up in the early part of the season last year. There were two games left in the final nine. This year, you finish off with three of the final four games in the division. I like that. I think teams have a much better feel for one another later on in the season as opposed to early.
Totally agree with you. Besides, division games, because of the emotions and the rivalry, they tend to drain you a lot more than other games do. So when you start bunching them together within a given month, they sap you dry. And if your team is hurting, and if you're fighting and you're struggling and you're on the cusp of doing something good, or if you've got guys who are banged up, those games will just take all the energy out of you. And they're really hard to get through. So I like the fact that they're broken up for different reasons than you say, but I agree with you.
The other observation that I noticed coming out of the bye after they go to London, a real nice three-game homestand to build some momentum.
Totally agree with that.
To set the tone for the second half of the season. Eagles, Bengals, Bears, November 6th, 14th, and the 20th.
A three-game homestand after the bye week coming off that London trip, to me, is a great opportunity for this team to get comfortable, to kind of dig its feet into the ground and say, hey, this is where we're going to decide if we're contenders this year or not.
Now, the other thing to note is there are still a number of primetime games, which is not necessarily a surprise, but early, you got a quick turnaround here. You have the Monday night game at Minnesota, and then you have Ben McAdoo returning to Lambeau Field for the Sunday night game against two top teams within the NFC North. So that's going to be a real early test, I think, for the Giants within the first few weeks.
That is true, but what I like about it is that they're going to Lambeau in warm weather in October, so that's not much of a factor. Not that the Giants haven't won in cold weather in Lambeau before, but that's not really a killer factor for them. And in Minnesota, again, that's going to be the new ship stadium or stadium ship that they'll have in Minnesota, so the weather, not an impact there. So that's an early game as well. I think maybe one of the good things, I haven't looked at the Vikings and Packers schedules, but because they're in the same division, I wonder if in the first month they play similar opponents, and that makes it easier to prepare for the Giants because they will have gotten a chance to see the Packers while preparing for the Vikings. I'm not sure.
It's possible. I haven't looked at that carefully. I was just looking, obviously, from the Giants' perspective. You're right. Weather may not be a role, but it is a quick turnaround that week with the two primetime games. The other thing, just in terms of the structure, I mean, opponents at this point, it's hard to speculate about teams,
right,
weeks 13 and 14 and 15 and so forth. But you do finish up four games on the road in the final six, whereas in years past, we've seen some more home games, or we've seen, especially last year on the schedule, the final eight games, Paul, you alternated road and home games. This year, you've got a bulk of road games packed together very late in the year.
Although I don't really consider the two games against the Browns and Steelers at the start of that six-game stretch to be much of a factor, I'm going to look at it just with the last four games.
Okay.
The home game against Dallas and Detroit, okay, that's fine. Obviously, how are you going to complain about that? But even the last two games, on the road against Philly and on the road against Washington, those are not road trips that take a lot of juice out of you. Okay? The Eagles, heck, that's a quick ride right down the turnpike. The Redskins, more often than not, that's a train ride down to D.C. So you're not talking about time zones or having to worry about flights. You know, that's not – those are not – in fact, let's face it, those are the two easiest trips you're going to make. As a football team.
Well, and I think you bring up a good point, Paul, because let's not forget, week 15, December 18th, home against the Lions. Then they've got their Thursday night game this year very late in the season. So if you're going to go on a short week, I'd rather have a short trip if I'm going on the road.
No question.
You're going to Philly after playing a 1 o'clock Sunday game at home. So that's at least manageable compared to, I mean, there's some teams you got to go cross country on the short week on that Thursday game.
How would you like, right there, swap the Packers game out with the Eagles or the Redskins? How'd you like to have that, a road trip in the middle of December to Green Bay coming off of one of those games?
Going to a cold weather Lambeau type of atmosphere.
That's not, and you're halfway across the country. Plus, you got to worry about maybe flight delays. Nothing cool about that. So I think this is great. You got your two easiest road trips the last two games of the season. So I almost don't even consider that a big deal. Road trips, to me, that's nothing.
201-939.
I can walk to those places.
You can. Oh, I don't doubt that. 4513 is the telephone number. Let's finish up the program with a phone call or two. Lance Meadow, Paul DiTino with you here on Giants.com. Remember, Big Blue Kickoff Live brought to you by DraftKings. Now, if you've never played on DraftKings, it's changing the way we play fantasy sports. Just pick your contest, pick your players, and if you win, pick up your cash. Simple as that. Go to DraftKings.com, enter promo code CONTACT to claim your free entry today. DraftKings Fantasy Sports, free to play. Pradell is in New Jersey. Pradell, what's happening?
Hey, how you doing?
Doing well. How's things with you?
All right, everything is good. I'm calling because I think the Giants, where they messed up at the free agency, a real big mess up was re-signing Pierre Paul. I thought he should have did the same thing Victor Cruz did, came in maybe for $1 million. I would have kept Robert Ayers. I just didn't understand them re-signing him for all that money.
Well, I think
I don't get it.
Well, Pradell, I think, you know, JPP and Victor Cruz are two different circumstances because, you know, while there are still question marks about JPP and whether or not he'll return to form prior to the injury, JPP got back out on the field last season. You had an eight-game sample size to say, okay, he still can work out. He still can be well-conditioned. He can still go out there and try to get after the quarterback. He still needs to obviously hone his craft and so forth and get used to playing without some fingers and adjust the glove and so forth. But you've got at least a sample size. With Victor Cruz, you know, it's still a guessing game in terms of him getting out on the field and what he's going to give you. So I think it's a little bit different in terms of your comparison. I don't think it's as big of a risk with JPP as it would have been with Victor Cruz based on those contractual situations.
I agree. It's two different spots, but I think they should have kept Robert Ayers. JPP hand. I saw a video maybe last week. is so deformed, I just can't see how he could tackle. Well, you know, he was good with the long arms. You know, that's what he was known for. Somebody would go up the field 5 yards, and, you know, he'd snatch him up with his hands. I don't understand that signing. I just don't.
Well, that's something that he's going to have to adjust, and he's been on the record saying that's going to be something that he's going to have to look at over the course of the offseason. He talked about that. He's not going to wear that club anymore. They're fitting him for a glove, so it'll be a little bit more manageable. But, you know, you brought up Robert Ayers. Let's not forget Pradell. I mean, they did bring in Olivier Vernon. They brought in Damon Harrison. So while you did lose Robert Ayers, you also upgraded by bringing in another pass rusher and another guy that's going to line up with Jonathan Hankins to help stop the run. So, you know, in free agency, you lose some players, but you also bring in some other players. I mean, it's sort of a give-and-take type of relationship. It's no different than what every other team in the National Football League is dealing with.
I know. You're absolutely right, but I think they signed him for way too much money. Way too much money.
Well, remember, the Giants had a lot of cap space, though. I think it's all relative based on how much flexibility you had. The Giants entered the offseason, remember, Pradell, as one of the teams that had a lot of flexibility based on the moves that they made over the course of the offseason and so forth. So it's not as if by giving JPP a one-year contract, remember, it's just a one-year deal, so it's still a prove-it type of deal. I don't think they put themselves in a precarious situation where now their future is all of a sudden in jeopardy that they can't bring in other players to surround the team with talent.
It's a win-win because if he goes out and proves himself and kicks butt, well, then he's going to get more money, and chances are the Giants are going to want to keep him and give him more money. So it's a win-win for everybody.
Exactly.
It's a win-win, but to me, even before the hand, even before the accident, I don't think JPP was, you know, like Batman and Robin. He's more like a Robin. After tucking him left, you know, he really didn't play good football.
Well, Pradell, I think that's a trend throughout the NFL. Listen, we got to let you go. We're up against the clock. Appreciate the phone call. When players have compliments on the opposite end, it could do wonders for you. I mean, look at Robert Ayers. When JPP returned, Paul, I mean, his production went up. That doesn't mean that he wasn't effective prior to that.
He was more of a Robin than anybody.
Correct. And I could say the same thing with Seattle, Denver, all these teams. When you have Von Miller playing opposite you, it does make life a lot easier.
Let me just ask you a question, and we're going to go. I know Dave needs to get out of here. Let me just ask you a question. Do you think the Giants would be okay if Vernon was Batman and had 14 to 15 sacks and JPP was Robin and had maybe 10? You think they'd be okay with that?
I'd sign up for that. I think most teams would sign up for that. And then I think that they have some time for maybe a villain to run wild, too, and they could take care of that playing off of
can
your
I be the Riddler?
Comparison. You could be the Riddler, absolutely. You've got the feet and the footwork to be the Riddler. No doubt about that. With that being said, enough of our wild comparisons here on the program. We appreciate everybody for tuning in here on Big Blue Kickoff Live on Monday. It's with you each and every weekday at noon Eastern. We'll continue to preview the draft. We'll continue to keep you updated on all the latest Giants news. For Paul Dottino, I'm Lance Meadow. Enjoy the rest of your Monday. We'll speak to you tomorrow. Have a good one.
All right, here we go. Come on, man. We need the work. Let's go.
Got through the field. He's got through.